This is RSBNB Update, episode 548, recorded Thursday, December 24th, 2015. That's a topic for another show. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update, episode 547. Earth and I here for a little bit to discuss a couple of things with us friends here.
Hello.
So this episode is going to be released on Christmas Eve. It's the holiday special, at least part of the RSBNB Update holiday special. So we actually do have some interesting things lined up for you guys. Basically, how this episode is going to work is that Earth and I here are going to talk about part 4 of the Christmas Quest and get his opinions on the Christmas Quest as a whole.
Opinions.
Yes.
All right.
And following that, we are going to talk about first poll that we've had in the in-game polling center since what seems like forever, since July. And then followed by that, we're going to bring in two other individuals. One of them is a friend of Earth's from school. His name is Alan. And, of course, the other guy is named Tyler, who has been on the show before. And we're going to discuss the other non-RuneScape-related
topics. Wait, I thought we already did that.
We did, and that's the miracle of time travel, or post-production.
Whoa.
I know, eh?
Hey.
All right, so let's get going. So, I'll talk about Christmas Event Part 4. Do you want to talk about your opinions of the entire thing first?
Ugh. Can that, like, just be my review of it? Or well, do I... Yeah, no, it can't.
No, it can't.
Unfortunately.
All right, well, I'll start with Part 4, Quantum of Solstice. As we mentioned previously, all these are named after James Bond movies. I never saw Quantum of Solace on DVD or in theater. Did you?
I don't remember.
All right. Well, anyways, in part 4, you guys remember last week we saved Santa. So this week, the final act of this quest is that we need to enable the Christmas dinner to happen. And in doing this, we basically need to deliver the presents, execute the feast, and say Merry Christmas to everyone. So in order to do this, well, it's fairly self-explanatory because, as we know, this is a Christmas-level quest, so it's not something that requires a massive amount of critical thought. Basically, all you need to do is, you basically need to deliver the presents, and the first one goes to the King Black Dragon. Now, doesn't it? That was a little bit freaky.
Well, it was supposed to go to King Arthur, if you read the dialogue,
right.
Shane, but
Sorry.
What's his name, Norris, was like, I don't think I'm going to take it to the right person first, so he took it to the King Black Dragon, and what do you know, there were penguins that tried to kill the guy, but, surprise, it's a giant-ass dragon, so,
yeah,
it did not go so well for them.
There were no sounds for that part, I was anticipating penguin wailing.
Wailing?
Well, you know, like the wailing sound.
Isn't wailing, like, illegal by international treaty now?
I think it is. But, anyways, there were no sounds, which was kind of unfortunate. But, anyways, after that, the present does make its way ultimately to King Arthur. And then after that, you return to the iceberg.
Wait, what? It makes its way to King Arthur?
That's what I got from it.
But it was a fake present. There was nothing...
Oh. Oops. Yes, you're right.
Go, Shane.
Well, it's the end of the year. Give me a break.
No. I will never give you a break from making things up.
Oh, dear.
I will call you on your shit, sir.
You know, yeah, anyways, but I was going to say something, but I realized that would be breaking the fourth wall once again.
I don't think you know what that means, because you've already addressed the listeners.
That's true. Okay. Well, maybe the fifth wall then, since I was talking.
What were you going to say?
I was going to mention the clip show, but that is in the future.
Dude.
And it was prepared in the past, but we're recording it in the present.
In the future.
Yes.
We're recording whatever the hell episode number this is now.
547.
Some deep stuff, man.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Temporal mechanics is hard.
It's really not. Anyway.
Okay, so after that, you make your way back to the iceberg, and you will have to do a couple of things to just clean up the area. Basically involves decorating a tree, making some ice sculptures, and gathering fish for the feast. Because, well, penguins, and they like their fish, right?
Of course.
Yeah. So after you do that, that's really the grindy part of this quest. Well, part of this quest, rather. And
I thought all of it was grindy.
Okay. And then after that, you need to go and find the various penguins that you want to invite to the quest. And then after that, you get a nice little cutscene and quest complete.
Yay!
And the reward for this one is the penguin outfit.
Yay!
And you can use the area to receive crafting and fishing XP. So.
Yay!
And that's what we got. And, you know, this is about, on average, similar to the rest of the events in that they offer between 40 and about 55,000 XP an hour, depending. Though the cooking is significantly more here, about 150K.
Because cooking's already fast to train.
Yeah, so I mean, we could all use some free cooking XP, maybe. Maybe
could
not.
We?
I don't know.
I haven't actively trained cooking in probably 5 years.
I know. I could look that up for you, find when your last plus cooking XP was. But
not until you fix the database.
It is fixed.
Well, name change.
Oh, right. Well, your old data is still there. Earth271072 is there.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay, so that's part four. Now, what did you think of part three, two, and one? Start with one. Or you can attack it on the whole if you want.
I can't distinguish between them.
Because you did it all at once.
Yeah. It started out promising, and then once I got to the bit where I was literally just skating in a circle for probably, what, 10 minutes?
I think it was more like 5, but okay.
It felt like an eternity, or 3. At that point, I lost complete interest in anything that happened in the quest.
And see, that speaks to a general problem with this kind of questing mechanic, is that when you introduce something that's grindy and dull, you turn people away from it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, ordinarily, I don't think it would be a problem if you did it all in bit by bit, but we were told when this came out that you can either do it week by week, or you can do it all in one sitting. So, I don't think that plays very well, but what did you think of the making the snowmen part and animating them?
Took too long.
All right. Interesting mechanic, though, with using the snow to heal them, I think.
I guess.
Yeah.
Still took too long.
All right. And then I'll just ask you about the rewards, and we'll move on to our other topics of the day. So the rewards, of course, for the first part, rehashing it, was the penguin snowboard, which I guess you can use here, though it was more useful last year at the Lumbridge Crater.
I guess.
Yeah. Part two was the ice skating champion emote. Woo!
Woo!
Also, of course, notwithstanding, if you... Or is that the right word? I don't know. If you didn't unlock the previous year's emotes, you can unlock all of those by doing this part of the quest, Live and Let Slide.
Correct.
So there's that at least. Also, agility XP from that part. The first part was either cooking or... was it cooking XP? Yeah, it was cooking XP. But, defense XP as well from tasting food, oddly.
Yeah, that was a little strange to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, every
the whole thing seemed kind of poorly done as a whole.
Okay. And part three's reward was the Ring of Snow.
What does that do?
It turns you into a present.
Okay, so it's like...
It's like the Ring of Stone.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. You box yourself up.
Call it the Ring of Snow, then.
Yep.
It turns me into a gift. That's stupid.
And unfortunately, you can't move around while you're in the box, so it's not like that thing for
Snow
the spy
like
on.
Snake.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
how disappointing.
Oh, that what the thing on TF2 is called?
No, Snake is... Like, Solid Snake? Like, sneaking around in a box? No?
No.
Do you not know what... Okay.
I'm sorry.
Hi, sorry.
And, of course, part four, the penguin outfit, and the ability to receive crafting and fishing XP from this event. So there we go. You know, there was no... well, I guess it was called the Pinch who stole Christmas. Which we've...
Oh, my God.
I know, but it does stand for something.
My God.
It stands for the Penguin Initiative for Nationalization of Christmas Holidays. Because they are USSR.
Because
Soviet Union.
One, you said it out loud, and two, I hated everything once I skated in a circle for about 5 minutes. I think that was literally 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It was much too long.
Yep, it was. And, you know, that's the same general way I feel about this. I think, ultimately, the idea behind it was good. The execution was okay, probably a 3 out of 5. But it could have been...
That's generous.
It could have been... Well, I mean, it worked, right?
I guess. There were zero glitches that I noticed.
Yeah. I mean, they saved those for the first week, so you miss those. But...
how bad were the glitches week one?
It was something with the imp not appearing after the presents.
Oh, so literally game-breaking. Okay.
Yeah. But it got fixed in a hotfix, so that's good. And, I mean, I'd like to see more episodic quests like this, but they just need to be meaningful and less grindy.
And not literally terrible.
Yeah. Because I honestly think last year's Christmas event was better than this, and nothing tops Christmas 05, I believe.
That is correct. What? I mean, I thought Christmas 2004 was better than this one.
Oh, okay.
Do you remember what we did for Christmas 2004, Shane?
No, I just remember we got the yo-yo.
You literally went to Santa in Varrock Square, and he gave you a yo-yo.
Yeah, that works. I mean, it's nice
and
simple.
That was the end.
Yeah, that's nice and simple. I agree. But nothing tops 05.
No.
Alrighty. Well, there's a Christmas quest, and hopefully you guys are enjoying this on Christmas Eve, if you haven't already played it. But anyways, as I mentioned, we have some polls to discuss. Polls that... Well, the polling system hasn't been used since June or July, believe it or not, which is you know, I was shocked to see these. And
isn't this like the year of the player or whatever the hell? Or was that last year?
That was last year. This was supposed to be the Rune Labs year with half the updates coming from Rune Labs. But the first one asks, what has been your RuneScape highlight of the year in 2015? And you know what the winner is?
What?
Raids and MazCab.
The hell is MazCab?
That's the realm where the Gobies live.
Oh, the forest.
Yes. Yes. Right on. And second was the boss pets. followed by the player-owned ports. Or, I'm sorry. No. I messed that up. But second was Boss Pets, and third was the Tuska World event.
Really?
Yeah. Really? Followed
Whatever.
By the Summer Beach Party. I mean, I took two things away from this, and this is all I'm going to say about this. One, the
Times
most favorite
have changed.
Yes, and the most favorite update of the year was not a player power or Rune Labs update, which says something. And number two, I mean, yes, these are substantive updates, raids and Tuska, but they're not deep, if you know what I mean. So I'm not sure what it means for the player base. And you're right, times have changed. So what was yours? What did you vote?
I told you, but I don't remember.
It was the vampire thing.
Yeah.
Lord of Vampirium. That had 1,290 votes.
And for perspective, how much did the max have?
The max cap?
Sure.
5,500.
Whatever the top one was.
Yeah, 5,500 raids.
Mm.
I voted for Dishonor Among Thieves, the Zamorak quest.
Good.
Yeah, that is 370 votes, so... For me, it was a tie between that or The Light Within.
It's all right.
Yeah. I mean, the Vampire Quest was up there, too. But we're questers, after all, so that's our perspective on this. I just see choosing raids as an example of, oh, let's go fight something hard and let's make 8 mil an hour. Whoop-de-doo.
Whoop-de-doo.
I know. And I don't know. Can I use the word salty?
I don't know. Can you?
I don't know. That's how I feel.
If you want to.
That's how I feel about seeing these rewards. Or not the rewards, the pull results. Because
it's your choice, but...
Because you have a community that, you know, is so XP-focused and... There's so many good quests and other interesting updates on here, like the minigame spotlight, that barely even, you know, registered a blip. So.
Yeah.
I mean, the aquarium got 941 votes. Anyways.
Not funny.
No. Okay. And then we have two polls for Iron Man accounts that they can exclusively vote in when it comes to time event rewards. And it appears as though people do want the Iron Man accounts to have access to rewards.
Like what?
Well, they say alternate access to rewards. So that means that, you know, something like the World Event 1 comes out. Previously, they wouldn't have been able to get the hybrid armor, but after this poll comes in, they
will
be
able to. Why
not? Well, because it's something that's just handed out, and it becomes level 75 armor, which initially was not within the spirit of the Iron Man account.
Oh, okay. Whatever.
So, that is why that's there. And then, of course, other things that are on this list, and... will be coming in probably our bonus XP weekends, potentially. Which they weren't able to participate in. And, you know, there's also a secondary poll talking about XP given out to them. And nope. There's not going to be any nerf or cap on the amount of XP you get. If an event gives XP, the Iron Man characters will get full XP. So if I had an Iron Man character, I don't honestly know how I'd feel about that.
I don't know.
So, I mean, I don't have one yet, but I feel like I should create one to vote in this poll and start that untrimmed farming.
Oh my god, Shane. Stop.
I kind of let that go. But anyways, there's the RS updates for the week. Not much else to say on the polls, I don't think, unless there's anything you want to talk about.
I got nothing.
Alrighty then. Well, now we're going to talk about our other topics that we've reserved for this episode. Hopefully you guys enjoy that.
Wait, but we already did that.
I know. It's the miracle of editing.
Whoa.
All right, and joining us now, joining Earth and myself, is some people that you might not have heard of before. You might have heard of one of them, but you definitely haven't.
Tyler literally on the show like 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, something like that.
I've literally never been on it. So.
And that it is exactly why we're going to say that Tyler was on the podcast a few weeks ago. Say hello, Tyler.
Hello.
And we also have one of Reed's and now my good friends, Alan, who plays weekly PC gaming with us. Say hello, Alan.
I just did. Hello.
Hello, Alan.
All right, so this is what we call That's a Topic for Another Show. This is a show that we like to do every year. It's basically the show where we can discuss things that might have been a little too controversial during the rest of the year, so we've decided to push them forward to end of the year and give them their own episode. We've covered all kinds of things in the past, from, you know, gay rights, women's right to choose. What are some other ones? Obamacare.
Racial equality.
Racial equality, there you go. So that's kind of stuff you can think of this year. But this time we're going to go in with some things that are more relevant and a couple things that have been touched on the show briefly but could earn a bit more discussion. And that's why I put our first topic in here. The state of Apple versus Google versus Microsoft. Kind of merge the two there. But when it comes down to it, this is something that we've touched on the show numerous times throughout the year, I think, right?
Once, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know because I don't listen. So.
Well, that's why you're here, as an external factor. But anyways, so, you know, this is something we can go into for quite some time. And what we're going to try and do with this segment here is limit everything to about 15 minutes, give or take. So let's start off with this first one here. And I just want to kind of set the stage as to what the landscape looks like right now. And that is the following. At the end of 2015, Apple has a product from your wrist to the desktop. And their grand vision of things is that you start with the simplest product being the watch on your wrist and work your way up. And Apple continues to be dominant in the high-end smartphone business, their app store, you name it, and they're innovating slowly but surely. Now you have Google, which has maintained their dominance in search year after year, advertising, and overall increasing the Android install base, especially in the low to mid-price range smartphone market. Then finally, you have Microsoft on the rise after struggling to find its footing with Windows 8. I think we can all agree here that Windows 8 probably wasn't a hit.
I never used it, so I had no
with comment. Most people, sure.
All right. And of course, this year we saw the release of Windows 10, which is largely heralded as a success. And overall, Microsoft remains a dark horse in the mobile race. So, with that being said, I just want to ask a couple of questions to get this started here. First things first, what's the biggest hurdle that Apple, Google, and Microsoft individually have to overcome in 2016?
I mean, I thought for a second you said turtle.
Well, they could do that too, I guess.
Well,
what is the biggest turtle?
Them jumping over a turtle.
So. And secondly, turtles aside, what will be the most successful, or who will be the most
turtles
successful
at, all the way down,
at overcoming these hurdles and advancing in 2016?
In what?
Well, just in general, company philosophy, profit margins, and penetration into the market.
When you put it like that way, I don't know.
Well, Apple's Google has the biggest mobile share market, right?
Yeah, it's something like north of 70%, I want to say.
Damn. And then Apple's going to be for rich private school kids and business people.
It's not just for that demographic. Not at all.
There's also the soccer demographic.
I went to a private high school and literally everyone except like 5 people had iPhones. And then I found out that not everyone had that. And I was like, wait. Or no, I found out that Android had like a 70% market share. And I was like, wait, what? And it's because they have cheaper phones, like $30 phones.
Everything Apple produces is overpriced.
It's very expensive, so it's not going to stay out of that demographic primarily.
All right.
I hope Windows Phone takes off. Like, the only issue is getting people to try it. Yeah, exactly.
You laugh now, and that's the way. Call it the dark horse.
Yeah, like, I know Paul tried it, and he loved it.
But it didn't work with his company stuff.
Yeah, which is the issue, because Google hates Microsoft. Microsoft definitely going to keep their 90% market share.
On the desktop.
On the desktop.
I can't see that going away.
No. People who work use Windows.
All right. Now, hurdle-wise, Apple.
Price.
Okay, price. Tyler, Alan?
I think that their biggest hurdle is going to be really pushing both their iPad Pro and the Watch. Because I think that they haven't set themselves up in a good position. They haven't set themselves up in a good position to sell a lot of iPad Pros, and I don't think that people are convinced of the smartwatch market yet.
Okay. Alan?
I'm definitely not convinced of the smartwatch market, so. I mean, as far as the iPad goes, I was never going to get an iPad, regardless of what model it was. So.
Well, Alan, you and I could go live in 1920 and we'd be perfectly happy, right?
I suppose.
Anyways. Hurdle-wise for me, for Apple, it comes down to software. I honestly think looking at OS X Yosemite and El Capitan and iOS 9 and 8, that their software is looking increasingly old, especially when compared to Microsoft's offerings in terms of operating systems, mainly on the desktop, but mobile's kind of getting there too because you really haven't seen much, you know, innovation in iOS aside from the new hardware dongles or dangles or whatever you want to call them that get added onto each
dingles.
We're not going there. That get added onto each iPhone, like Touch ID, Force Touch, that kind of thing. That's really the only thing that's advancing iOS aside from from the consumer perspective, because each year the developers jump up and down at the things they get, but normal users don't get excited about that. So to sum up, it comes from software and ensuring that both their desktop and mobile operating system remain competitive, because I sit here right now in front of an iMac, a 27-inch iMac, and the software on it feels old compared to Windows 10. And I have to say that if the ecosystem on Windows 10 was better and for applications, it provided a native Unix environment for programming and that kind of thing.
PowerShell?
Well, maybe, but I still like the Unix backend. So
Shane, when
and the third thing keeping me on OS 10 is my podcast recording setup. But
so you go ahead.
Oh, so Shane, when you say that you feel that OS 10 is old, is it more that you think that there are ways to improve it, or that in comparison to like even Snow Leopard, a lot seems the same?
Well, I think I can explain this. So, and Shane, you tell me if this is right.
Yep.
Going from Windows 7 to Windows 10 felt like a completely new operating system. Now, I don't have any experience with Apple on the desktop, but for iOS, upgrading to a new major version of iOS, I could definitely tell that it was like, it was still the same.
Yes.
Like, it may look shinier, but it's still literally just the same thing. Is
yes,
that accurate?
You hit the nail on the head there. Going back to...
It doesn't change dramatically from one issue to another.
Going back to version 10.2, we're on 10.10 right now. Like you said, the only thing that's gotten more shiny, the development tools have improved, and as with that, have the applications. But aside from that, the OS is the same, an OS written in 2001, designed with metaphors and user interactions suitable for that era. And with what you said, Reed, Windows 10, I think, was the biggest jump for Microsoft since Windows 95 from 3.1.
I'll have to take your word on it, because I'm not ancient like you.
Back in my day, do you remember when you used to have to choose between booting DOS and booting Windows?
No.
Like I said, taking your word on it, old man.
Okay. So, you know, that is the thing that made me put this in here, is because it just feels as though Apple's on cruise control. And Microsoft is the interesting one. And Google is utilitarian. So
utilitarian. Unpack that.
Utilitarian basically means that its user interface is designed to get things done. There's no pinch or fuss as to, you know, adding extra shiny embellishments along the way, and they don't do anything drastic.
Are you talking about, like, animations
Android.
And shit?
I'm just talking about Android and its presentation in general, yeah.
No. But, like, how it's utilitarian, why would iOS not be?
Well, I'm just saying in terms of, you know, getting things done, in that I call Google utilitarian because it's bare and relatively flat and unimpressive visually.
So it's not shiny.
Yeah. That's what utilitarian means. But it works.
Okay. And that's the reason it can run on anything.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, from the $5 Raspberry Pi all the way up to the
$200. Hey, Windows can run on one of those.
That's right. So.
That's true.
And like I said, I think this year was a great year for Microsoft, and they're on the rise, and that's the only direction I think they're going to go. Would you guys agree with that statement?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Sure. I mean, I don't know anything about the subject, so.
Well, are you on Windows 8 or 10, Alan?
I'm still on 7, so.
Okay.
You can pretty much ignore me for this whole portion of the conversation.
Well, you should probably upgrade to 10 at some point.
I probably will eventually.
Right on.
What's been keeping you from doing that already?
Laziness.
Okay. Fair.
And my computer is fairly old, so there's no telling how it would react. So.
Yeah. I mean, it runs better. Windows 10 does than 7 and 8, but you're getting a new one soon, right?
Yeah, so.
So it doesn't even matter. That'll probably come with 10.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, we can talk about that. Well, in next year's, that's a topic for another show. Alan's new computer.
Boy. Well, it won't be new then, but no.
But, you know, I just got to put this out there, and it's a grim forecast, and, I mean, it likely won't happen.
What? But, wait, what's a grim forecast?
Well, I just don't think that Apple is going to be able to keep its hardcore users around.
Apple has hardcore users?
Well, yeah, like the Apple fans who want something
hardcore, yeah.
I mean, I think the better. Hardcore Apple fans they're in it for almost the same reasons that you are. They like the Unix backend. They're programmers. If they're like audiophiles, they have some setup that really keeps them there. And I don't think Microsoft is really trying to get into those capture niches.
Capture that because it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm speaking more on iOS, because does it make sense that in 2015 the digital assistant called Siri shouldn't be able to hook into other applications?
Yeah, I still think that that's hilarious that you can't do that.
That is the
biggest
thing that needs to happen with next year's iOS release.
Because that was like out of the box with Cortana.
Yeah, yeah. That and
it
they
just works.
They also need to work on the ability for their platform to become more discoverable. I'll give you guys an example right now if you have an iPhone. So you can swipe down on any part of your home screen. You get a search pane where you can search for practically anything. But you can also swipe to the right on the home screen all the way, and you get another search screen there that's more detailed. So the question is like, why are there two ways of doing this? And what am I accomplishing by using one over the other? So it's just...
Literally nothing be an acceptable answer.
Maybe. But it ultimately comes down to discoverability and the ability for the operating system to be discoverable to new users. Because I'm a fairly sophisticated iOS and OS X user, and I shouldn't need to go into a changelog to find out what's new. Just putting that out there. So, in case you can't tell, I do feel as though there are some problems with iOS and OS X that need to be fixed. And I'm not sure if they're going to be fixed, but it's definitely something that should be
looked at. Wait, you mean iOS isn't flawless?
No, it's not.
No.
It is not flawless.
He never said such
a thing. Oh, good thing I wasn't going to upgrade it then.
So, I just want iOS and OS X to feel modern once again, to feel the same way Windows 10 feels, and I'm sure the same way your Windows Phone feels, right, Reed?
Sorry, say that again?
I just want iOS and OS X to feel modern the same way your Windows Phone feels.
You know, that may be why I like it so much, because, like I was saying, iOS at the core has been the same since, what, 2007?
Yep.
Something like that.
Just a bit of an interface change when they fired Scott
Forstall.
And it
looks a little shiny.
Yeah. But?
That's, that may be why, because... I mean, the whole application, hooking into applications thing you were mentioning, I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, and...
And I use Cortana frequently. I literally turned Siri off on my phone because I found it irritating.
Like, see, I use a to-do list called Clear, and you can't access the to-dos with Siri. So it's either you use a default reminders application, which would have been passable, you know, a couple years ago, but now no, it's not. So it's just major annoyance on that part, and I don't know what the answer is. Well, I know what the answer is for Apple, but I don't know what the answer is for me, because I'm fairly tied into the Apple ecosystem. But anyways, that's something for me to worry about at a later date, I think. Anything else on Apple, Google versus Microsoft?
Apple sucks.
Nice.
I own an iPhone, no. And I can confirm that Apple sucks. So.
No.
All right. Well, that was our first segment right there. So I think it's time we should move on to the next one. Everyone good with that?
Yep.
All right. Now, previously focusing in the virtual world, we moved to something that's a little bit more present and dangerous, let's say, and that's the ever-increasing presence of the Islamic State, otherwise known as ISIL, ISIS, or Daesh, as the Middle Eastern countries call them. This was exemplified by the recent attacks in France and the U.S., and to casual observers, it doesn't appear as there's any progress being made in combating it. So a question that we'll just start off with here is, from your folks' perspective, has progress been made in keeping us safer and beating them back, and are we ultimately winning?
I mean, you know, I've got a map here that, you know, it's a few months old, but ISIS has lost some territory, but they've also gained some, so it's not really, as far as I can tell anyway, going anywhere.
Okay. You feel safe?
In the continental United States, yes.
I mean, most places, yes.
All right, how about you, Tyler?
Yeah, I feel safe.
Okay.
Now Shane's going to drop a metaphorical bomb. needed to specify that.
Yeah, and I mean, it. Even with us up here, it's always in the back of your mind, but it's not something you think about day to day. But when you go to public places and you have the largest shopping mall in North America that was targeted, that kind of does sit in your mind every so often.
Yeah, glad I don't live in Edmonds.
Yeah.
For a number of reasons.
Oh, I can think of other reasons, but we won't go into
Wait, Edmonton has the largest shopping
mall in North America, yeah. West Edmonton Mall.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
The
I thought you were
now.
Talking about the Mall of America, and I was like, I've never heard anything happen there.
Yeah, but in terms of me answering that question, I don't think progress has been made, and I ultimately don't think we are winning this. And it's going to be a problem, I think, that the next president of the United States is going to have to tackle, because I think that this administration currently is willfully clueless on what is going on with this threat, and ultimately are unable to confront the actual reality of the root of the problem, which leads to my next question. Is radical Islam the root of the problem?
Well, you wrote this, so what do you think, Shane?
I honestly think it is, and the fact people are not...
Hold on. I'm going to stop you for a second. Are you specifically saying that Islam itself is the issue, or extremism in any regard could be an issue? It's just this that happened. Like, why did you specify Islam there, other than the fact that, I mean, they are Islamic? Did that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And,
yeah, I can see that.
And I'm not saying it's as a wider whole that Islam is the problem, but I'm saying it is the extremist element of it that is the problem.
Also, yeah, I don't
disagree that extremists are the one doing it.
Say that again, Alan.
I don't think anyone's going to, you know, seriously disagree that extremists are the problem here, and they're obviously Islamic extremists. So I don't see where the real controversy.
Yeah, is. I think if that question were supposed to be controversial, I think, is Islam the issue? And I would say no.
Yeah, that would be a much harder case to make.
And I agree with that case, but it seems like on the television, on the press releases from governments, our government, your government, etc., our new government, rather, it feels as though that those are two words together that people are afraid to say who are in power.
Well, that's because your government is too concerned that it's 2015 to say anything. But,
yeah.
I mean, I think it's the reason that Reed gave. It's extremism that's more the problem than this realized instance of radical Islam.
Okay, so... So then, basically, how come the president of the United States never says the words radical Islam?
What does he say instead?
Extremist.
I think that that's fair.
Technically, he's not wrong.
I think that that's very
technically he's not, but that's what everyone else is thinking. Correct.
Well, if they're already thinking it, there's not really a need to say it. I'm not really not a fan of the Obama administration, but there's no need to ding him on that count.
Yeah, okay. I mean, really, I think it's just being, you're just, what is it, arguing semantics at this point?
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. Like, you know who he's talking about. All right,
so basically, then the agreement is that.
These Islamic State people are. What do they stand for?
Well, it's in their very name, right? It's just a horrible view of that religion.
Pretty much.
And as a result of it, the thing can be said is that not all of the followers of Islam are the problem. Only a select few.
I agree with you there.
And that has to be the general trend that needs to be the way this is addressed. And as to where that goes in terms of creating a winning strategy, does anyone have any ideas on that, on what they'd like to see happen?
Well, I mean, I think a winning strategy would have been not completely destroying a country and then abandoning it to defend itself.
Which country are you referring to?
Iraq, in particular.
All right.
We've pretty thoroughly annihilated their military leadership during the war.
Yeah,
this is true.
America.
So it might have been a good idea to, you know, not completely pull out of Iraq, but, you know, just saying.
Yeah, that came and went in 2011.
As I recall, I think it was probably last year. The Iraqi military pretty much threw their weapons down and ran away when ISIS started approaching their territory, so...
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I imagine there was some American hardware in that.
Oh, yeah. There's... I feel sure that I've seen images or news footage, something of ISIS members using basically Humvees that we left there for the Iraqi government, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. Oh, boy. See that... as part of the problem that does need to be addressed in the next administration is that how do you prevent these kind of things from happening? And I don't know if the answer to that is more interaction between the U.S. military and the military in Iraq, or whether it's to not give up the hardware in the first place.
Well, I was going to say to not leave in the first place, because if there had been American troops there, it would have been a lot easier to fend
off
those, you know, convoys of technicals and whatever else they've got rolling around.
So,
I think if you
did
that,
question here: I'm not overly familiar with this. What's like their? What's ISIS's end game plan? Because they're basically antagonizing literally everyone.
Good question. I'm sure that their thing is like they want to start a caliphate or something.
Yes.
But I don't know.
They want
to caliphate. By antagonizing all of the major world powers who could just destroy
extremists
them.
Extremists and good plans don't usually go together. So
the idea is that they want the proper Islamic caliphate. They felt that the one led by the Ottoman Empire that was dissolved in 1921 wasn't proper, so they want to go back to a 7th century type caliphate.
And what does that entail? And how does aggroing literally everyone help them achieve that goal?
That's pretty much what the 7th century caliphate did at first, so...
Piss everyone off?
The Arab conquests, yeah.
And basically,
no,
they didn't have nukes back then, so
yeah, and that's what they want to be. They want to be basically that, but modern. And the idea behind it is, if you're not with them, then you might as well be destroyed.
Yay!
So that is probably why they're the biggest threat. And I don't know how this managed to become so underestimated by everyone. I mean, all sides, because there would have been someone talking about this with some kind of brain if they went back to, you know, the what was basically called the Sykes-Picot Agreement at the end of World War I, which was supposed to partition the caliphate up into areas of French and English control, and it didn't work, and if you trace that all the way back, that leads to the problems we have in the countries to the precursor countries towards the Islamic State, and then you ultimately end up where we are today. So if that hadn't have gone wrong, and if maybe that would have been executed better, then we might not be in this situation, but who's to say what the view in the 1920s was? So,
yeah, there's really no telling. It's pretty hard to kind of trace things back and say, well, this is the one thing that caused it. So,
yeah, and I mean, when you look at what they proclaim, there is reason to worry, and there is reason for there to be a concerted effort to stop them. Reason I asked about winning strategy is because when it comes down to it, it doesn't appear as though the air campaign is working. Do you guys think...
It's killing lots of them, but...
Well, yeah, but it's like whack-a-mole, right?
Out leaders, but...
It's whack-a-mole.
Yeah,
basically.
Much.
Kill one, another pops up.
Exactly. So the question is, does that require more of a presence, including ground forces?
It goes back to what I said, where we shouldn't have pulled out to begin with. Because think about, you know, every other country we've conquered, or maybe not conquered, but defeated thoroughly. You know, we still have troops
in Germany
and Japan,
exactly,
and South Korea, and all over places, other places.
Well, to be fair, the Korean War is not over.
That's also a good point. But you know,
I mean,
certainly,
although I think that's also something, I think that's actually a good thing to point out. Like, there's still a definite threat in Korea.
Oh, yeah, they still stare at each other.
Definitely a threat in the Middle East as well. So,
yeah,
question.
It's not exactly the most stable region, so one would have to question the wisdom of pulling out everything we've got in that immediate area.
After being the main power for what? Decade-ish?
Well, since,
something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, it comes down to winning an election. This decision was made by the Obama administration because of the 2012 election was coming, and he wanted to say that he ended the war in Iraq.
Well, to be fair, I think there was something about the Iraqi government wanting the U.S. troops gone, too, but, you know.
Yeah, well,
said, you know, this is a stupid idea, and you shouldn't go through with it, but...
As to whether or not to blame the Iraqis or the Obama administration, you could probably slice that 50-50. But
why?
Well, I mean, it's the Obama administration's fault for not negotiating hardware to keep, you know, 10, 20,000 troops there, right? And it's the Iraqi government's fault.
What possible reason would we have to stay there, though?
Secure strategic interests.
A ragtag group of people in pickup trucks from taking over half the country?
And you got to remember, in 2011, no one knew that this was going to happen. No one knew ISIS was going to happen.
No one. No one's going to. Okay, whatever.
I'm sorry.
I think John McCain said something about that, but I could be wrong. I'd have to look it up.
About what? Texas?
No, about Iraq collapsing. Or did I miss something here?
I might have missed something, too.
No, you said something about a bunch of people in pickup trucks taking over a nation. I made a joke about Texas that no one commented on, and then...
They're your neighbors, Reed.
Not really.
Neighbors? What?
Oh,
shame. Not really, only in as much as, like...
Your neighbor.
Saskatchewan.
Okay, maybe I felt that way because everyone drives pickup trucks here in Alberta.
Oh, so Texas is your neighbor?
Well, no, I just felt like you were maybe making some kind of insinuation about Alberta.
I was not.
Okay. So, is the solution to go back in and basically start from the top of Turkey and take city by city?
But we're not fighting... It's a different kind of war, though, is it not?
Aha, there you go.
Really. It's still a counterinsurgency in that sense, because once you go in, you know, ISIS knows good and well that they can't win a pitched battle against any serious military. the only reason they're doing so well in Syria is because, you know, the regime there has been battered for, what, 5 years now? I don't know how long. But as soon as you send troops, they're just going to disappear into the crowds again and pop out. So what you're looking at is a prolonged counterinsurgency, and the public doesn't have the patience for that.
Exactly.
That's the problem with doing anything.
Exactly. So that leads me to ask, what is the strategy? Because, I mean, you're not fighting for territory as you were in World War II, and you're not fighting against communism as you were in Vietnam or Korea. So what's the strategy?
Either you give up, or you can stay there forever to try and keep things stable until the governments are capable of doing it on their own.
What about installing our own, you know, overseer dictatorships, secular dictatorships?
I mean, I don't think that's going to fly in the 21st century.
Yeah.
We could do it, you know, there's no one to stop us, but that's not likely. I mean,
Russia.
Yeah, Russia might have some issues with that. But,
just tell them they can take Turkey. They won't
care. All right.
They've had the Bosphorus Straits since the, 1920s or 100s? I don't know.
Probably yeah, you could let Putin annex a few more areas. Give him Georgia, too, while we're at it.
I mean, they already basically invaded Georgia a few years back anyway, so...
Yeah. I mean...
Wait a minute.
The country.
Did I go to school there?
But, you know, this hits the nail on the head for me. Bang on. Because... it's going to be a long, bloody counterinsurgency if you send troops in. If you don't, they're going to thrive and prosper. So you need some kind of alternative. And to me, the only other alternative is to set up puppet governments.
And we did that all through the Cold War, so it wouldn't be unusual.
Exactly. And before ISIS, I was actually one of the few people who felt that Iraq was better off. But now I'm forced to change that viewpoint.
Was better off.
After the U.S.-led 2003 invasion.
I mean, it would be hard to argue, other than, you know, stability-wise, it'd be hard to argue that anyone was better off under Saddam Hussein.
Exactly. And ever since ISIS became a problem, that's exactly why, prior to ISIS, I said they were better off.
Well, and again, if we hadn't, you know, just ditched them to fend for themselves, they probably would be better off still.
Yeah.
Hindsight is 2020 and all that.
Yeah, and as it is for me, I don't think the American government, is at least not this one, has the will to do anything substantive. So we're going to be waiting at least until January 2017 to see some action on this.
Pretty much, yeah.
Which is unfortunate. But... okay.
I just want to check that Tyler is alive, because I haven't heard much out of him. So.
Oh, I am alive. I just didn't have a whole lot to offer.
Well, now's your chance before we move on. So, anyone?
I still anything have a else lot to offer.
On these? On ISIS or Islamic State?
Not really.
No. I mean... I hate to suggest dictatorships, but I think that's going to be the best solution going forward for that region.
Yeah, right.
Well, maybe not dictatorships, but, you know, overseers, kind of how we used to do in the 18th and 19th centuries.
You think we should all be Zerg, Shane?
Nice little StarCraft reference there.
Thanks.
I mean, I don't think we need to invade their government and annex all of their territory. But it would have, there's probably hundreds of thousands of square miles of empty, useless desert in Iraq that we could have set up, you know, one or two little bases there and had a small presence to keep things sturdy. It's not like they're going to put that empty space to use.
Yeah, and I mean, that's really all you need is something on the ground where you can launch operations from. I mean, I don't even know why there's any question.
That's the definition of a base.
There's no question of why this isn't done. The U.S. conducts airstrikes into sovereign nations all the time. Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen.
I don't really think we care about them, though.
Who, Pakistan or Yemen or what?
Yes.
All of the above.
All of the above.
That's a fair point.
Okay, then why care about Iraq and Syria?
Like, I think, if we did that with, say, Britain or Canada... without their permission. I think that's something different than some Middle Eastern.
Someone might notice,
hey, if you guys were targeting,
someone might care and be able to do something about it.
If you guys were targeting a terrorist and you talked to my government about it and you wanted to do something, in
yeah,
Canada,
but are we going to talk with the Pakistani government?
No, you're not. You're not. You're not. That's
Osama bin Laden, because we
and
didn't.
Guys, yeah, and there's a good reason for that too.
Yeah,
but we're splitting hairs.
Why we theorized that they were harboring him in any way?
Yeah. That's literally why we did that. And we were like, oh, yeah, sorry we did this without telling you.
But by the way, yeah, we're...
Sorry.
Hope you don't mind, but, you know, there's nothing...
It was 20 people at most. It's fine.
And two Apache helicopters?
No, they were modified stealth Blackhawks.
Well, actually, they were modified stealth Blackhawks. Oh, shut up.
It's a big difference. Apaches are meant for killing tank columns. I mean, they could kill buildings too.
I'm a filthy casual, obviously.
Yeah. How dare you not know
why
about
don't you understand? This is what I live for.
Alan, you want to start a podcast called
Attack Helicopter? You sexually identify as an Apache helicopter?
No, what? Not an Apache. I'm a Comanche.
What?
What?
A canceled 1990s stealth attack helicopter that's much cooler.
What? Are we in the 90s again? What?
You guys,
shame.
Alan, do you want to start a podcast on military hardware with me?
No.
Bree, do you want to start a podcast on Shane Sakes?
I would join that podcast.
What?
What?
Are you guys finished?
No, I'm Reed.
All right. Well, since we've devolved into comedy on that section, I'm going to move us on to American gun control. Seems every day you're hearing about a, quote, mass shooting in the United States.
I am taking her gun.
Well, there's that side of things, but
Obama himself is coming to take her guns.
Yeah, but so the question is, mass shootings in the U.S. Obviously, it's a problem to have that many mass shootings, and the question has come up: is it the culture that needs to
that
be
many?
Well, I forget what the number
was. I would make the bold claim that any at all is an issue, but
I mean, you're gonna have crime no matter what, so
yeah.
It's not like you can completely prevent that either way.
All right, is it the culture and the people that need to change, or is the gun the problem?
Why would the gun be the problem? It's an inanimate object.
Okay,
but there is a large proportion of them for how many are really needed, I would say, maybe.
Who says it's about need, though? I don't need a reason to own anything.
I guess that's true. I'll give you that.
I mean, if you wanted to be a gun collector, that's okay.
I mean, in an ideal
I feel like there
world,
are some better hobbies to have.
We obviously don't live in. High gun control would be great, but we don't live in an ideal world. So I really don't think there is a solution to the issue.
Right.
I think that, like, minimal...
Especially with the Second Amendment right that everyone loves so much. There's not an issue.
Red-blooded American, yes.
And for a bit of clarification to our international listeners, the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution allows the citizens the right to bear arms.
And that's like guns, not your forearm.
Or
well,
arms
not just
bears.
Guns, knives, and other things too. Flamethrowers, tanks, anti-air missiles.
Yeah, because we need those. We need tanks
again,
and anti-air missiles.
Well, it's perfectly legal to own a tank as long as you have it registered. You can't drive it on the roads, probably, because it would damage them, and you'd have to have, you know, signal lights. But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if I ever had the sum of money that someone like Bill Gates or Mark Zuckerberg did, I would buy a tank.
You could work for Jagex, Shane.
Yeah, that was MMG's tank. I think he took that when he stopped being CEO.
He took his tank with him.
Yep.
Took his toys All right. and left.
Took his toys and left. There you go.
I'm going to agree with Alan and say that the gun is not the problem. It's an inanimate object. It's the problem comes with the crazies that ultimately get a hold of these. And whether it comes down to background checks or, I mean, better, you know, mental screening of people's licensing for the guns or their abilities, you know, to have yearly healthcare checkups, something like that, maybe, in terms of limitations. But I don't believe the answer is just an all-out ban, because here in No. Canada, you're not allowed to own handguns and carry them with you. You're not allowed to own assault rifles and whatnot and so on and so forth. But so, the vast majority of violent crime in Canada is perpetrated with handguns, illegal handguns.
So do people up there not hunt?
Well, and see, that's the thing. If you're a hunter, you're a farmer, you're allowed to have the gun, but you need to register it and go through heaps and heaps of paperwork.
So you guys can still get guns?
Yes, yes.
Fairly easily.
But they can't be, you know, semi-automatic. They have very certain...
Only automatic weapons?
No, no semi-automatics or automatic weapons allowed.
So they have to be.
Are you
bolt
sure
action?
About that? Because that would rule out like every modern handgun ever. Like,
yeah.
Revolver.
Well, handguns aren't allowed in Canada.
What?
Handguns are not allowed in Canada. A person cannot own a handgun.
Sorry, you live in such a freedom-hating communist country.
I don't
the
know
only
how
way you're
allowed
to own one is if they're locked and they can't be loaded.
I mean, that's just common sense, though. There shouldn't need to be a lot.
Yeah, but you're never allowed to load them anyways.
If you load this gun, you're going to jail forever, kid.
From the criminal...
You can never actually use it for anything.
I want you Americans to tell me if this seems like a sensible law to you. This just comes from the Criminal Code of Canada and defines a restricted firearm. A restricted firearm is a handgun that is not a prohibited firearm. A firearm that is not a prohibited firearm has a barrel that is less than 470 millimeters in length and is capable of discharging centerfire ammunition in a semi-automatic manner. C. A firearm that is designed or adapted to be fired when reduced to a length of less than 660 millimeters by folding, telescoping, or otherwise.
Why does the length matter so much?
It doesn't.
Exactly.
Phrasing.
And D. A firearm of any other kind that is prescribed to be a restricted firearm.
Was this handguns or only, or just in general?
In general.
So you can't own short-barreled rifles.
Exactly.
Why?
That's
because
just...
Because they're scary looking.
Yeah.
But you can
the length
own...
Of the, barrel, the length of the barrel is...
Oh, maybe it's so... Maybe... I don't know how long... How many millimeters, Shane?
470 millimeters.
Okay, I think it's like if you have and anything above that is legal.
Yes,
is that what it was saying?
Yes,
yeah, it's
I guess it's just so
length.
You can't hide it.
Yeah,
easily.
The thing is though, you're gonna have a really hard time hiding a full sized rifle.
Well, no, 470 above it. It's talking about handguns because you could easily hide a handgun, but you can't hide a rifle, right?
Yeah. Yeah, 470 millimeters
so
is
that,
18
that makes
and a half
sense.
Hold on, how much is, because I'm not excellent in converting, how much is that length in, what's that in imperial units? Run that
imperial
by.
Units.
18.5 inches.
That's a rifle length barrel, so.
Yeah, anything above that is legal.
Yeah, so that would outlaw all handguns, unless you're going to carry around a comically large revolver like a Batman villain.
And of course, there are provisions for people who are collectors, so that If you're a collector, you must know the historical, technical, or scientific features of the firearms in your collection, consent to occasional inspections of the place where their collection is stored, and comply with regulations dealing with safe storage, record keeping, and other matters related to restricted firearms.
Doesn't really say anything other than, hey, we're going to check on you now and then. So.
Yeah, and see, that's my point, is that even given these regulations, there are still handgun crimes, long gun crimes, you name it, that happen here. So,
yeah, but on what scale? Like the Ottawa shooting, yeah.
Yeah, that was done with a hunting rifle.
Has there been any other major issues?
Aside from the occasional homicide and gang violence, no.
I don't think that's the scope of what we're talking about, though, no. Honestly.
Well, that's what I said. Aside from those, no.
So
but those happen seemingly almost daily everywhere else.
Yeah, but no mass shootings here, no.
So it would seem to me that that's, I don't know.
Think of, you know, what's in my mind is the San Bernardino shooting, where the guns they used were already illegal. So I'm not sure what the point of the whole gun was there. Didn't accomplish anything. And the features that are illegal in California, which has, you know, draconian gun laws, you know, bayonet lugs, so you can't mount a bayonet on your rifle. I can't think of a time a bayonet has ever been used in a crime. So there's no logic to that.
I mean, why would you just not use a knife at that point, right?
I mean, and you could tape a knife to the end of your gun if you were really, yeah, really desperate to shoot, stab somebody with a rifle.
Bayonet someone.
Or things like magazine capacity in California are ridiculously restricted already, and there's no difference at all. Especially on rifles that aren't used in crimes to begin with.
Mm-hmm. But that's the thing. I mean, would putting these restrictions in place limit the San Bernardino attacks or any other?
Nothing could have prevented that.
All right. How about going back a few years to the Sandy Hook shooting? Or the South Carolina white supremacist shooting earlier this year?
They both used what, handguns in both of those cases? I think the Sandy Hook guy had a rifle in his car or something that he didn't use, but I could be wrong. At which point,
So those would have been legal, correct?
They were illegally obtained. The one guy was I think the Sandy Hook guy was a nut that stole it from his mother, so that couldn't have been avoided.
Yeah, like a lot of these, like the shooting in France, it couldn't have been prevented unless, like, martial law is imposed, which obviously is not feasible.
Correct. So I guess we're left with the question then, how important is the Second Amendment, and would removing Second Amendment rights lead to less mass shootings?
I think there might literally be a war if
there literally would be. There's
yeah, because I mean that's so. For you international people, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution are referred to as the Bill of Rights.
Baseline human rights that the government shouldn't be tampering with.
Yeah, and I think if anyone tried to appeal those, it would not end well for anyone involved.
There are already people, myself included, who would argue that a lot of gun laws are already in violation of the Second Amendment because they're overly restrictive of things that there's really no reason to restrict. And the Second Amendment literally says should not or shall not be infringed. You could make a strong argument that a lot of the laws, especially in places like California where they are so strict, do infringe on that. Or in, you know, major cities like Chicago.
I'm going to agree with that.
Yeah.
And for people outside of the U.S., and I got this a couple of years ago, and you need to realize that this is baked into the United States Constitution from the very beginning. So, to you Americans, this is not absurd that you can just go out, purchase a handgun, and get a concealed carry license and have your own weapon on you.
Reading period after you buy a handgun.
Well, yeah, of course. But, I mean, just in general.
It's just delaying the inevitable.
Yeah, there's not. It's just the way it is. And, I mean, the Constitution's not going to change. So, obviously, it needs to be attacked from a different angle rather than gun control, which.
Well, I'm rather questionable
as to whether or not that would actually do anything meaningful.
You know, people always bring up that, well, we should be working on health, mental health care. Well, the system we've got already isn't bad, but people don't enforce it. I think it was the Sandy Hook guy. Or no, it was the black shooter, the guy that shot up the black church. He had already been, you know, flagged for being a nutcase when he was already out with a gun acting crazy multiple times, and nobody did anything about it. So, you know, that could have been avoided if people were more careful or the police were a little bit more vigilant about these things.
Now, and wasn't he from a rural area?
It was one of the, either him or the Sandy Hook guy, but I remember clearly reading an article about how he had been stopped by police for, you know, roaming around like a, you know, lunatic with a gun at some point. But, you know, if I'm wrong, sure, correct me.
I also think that things like that happening, it also depends on the location. Like, I don't know, I feel like people in the South are a little more lenient. I mean, I've never been up north for a prolonged amount of time, but does that make sense if I say that?
I think that, you know, people in major cities or more urban areas are generally less pro-gun than rural people.
Yeah.
Well, Tyler's the perfect person to ask about that because he is a bit further north than you guys.
Oh, he's a Yankee?
Ew, I'm sorry.
Ew.
I'm from
the Dakota,
but I live in New Jersey now.
Ew.
I'm so sorry. You have my sympathies.
Yeah, I definitely agree that in northern states, things that seem obvious in the South aren't so...
Define obvious.
Like, originally I'm from a very, like, Bible Belt area. So, like, religion and, like, gun control. Very, very polarizing views once you get north.
Well, and even then it depends where up north you are. I lived in Montana for years and nobody cared
I guess that's true.
There. Everyone loved guns in Montana.
I guess well, the central.
They
the
live
central
in Montana.
What?
There's Montana's not much in Montana.
On one of the places I'd move to if I had to move to the U.S.
I mean, it's pretty much Canada.
Really just
point.
A forest, right?
A forest.
Actually, well, it varies. There's like mountains that are covered in trees, and then in between them there's just flat emptiness. You know, grass. Occasionally a hill. It's an interesting state.
Hooray.
All right, anything else on gun control before we move on to our last topic?
I got nothing, I think.
I mean, I've already spoke my mind, I think.
All right.
Yeah, I don't think there's a clear solution.
All right, but you guys are in favor of keeping the Second Amendment intact.
Of course.
Out of necessity.
All right. Me too.
I mean,
me too.
I'm going to say I'm ready to shoot anyone who's prepared to, you know, get rid of it if it comes to that.
All right, and you would be justified in doing that because that's what the Second Amendment was designed to prevent.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's one of the basic rights, so it's got to stay. Like, that's not the only reason why I support it. I do think it's a good thing to have. But, I mean, just trying to get rid of it would not end well.
For the people trying to get rid of it, that is.
Yes.
All right. Well, with that being said, Tyler, anything on the gun control issue?
No, I'm good.
All right.
I'm good. Well,
this is really good, isn't it? But. Our final topic is the 2016 U.S. election as we are approaching primary season at the end of January. So questions for you guys. Tyler and Reid, are you guys going to sign up as registered Democrats to vote in your primary?
Already signed up as a Democrat just because.
Same.
Once I'm married, have my own house, if I have a fireplace, I'm going to sign up as an independent so I get a lot of mail, and then I can use that for Tinder.
That's a good idea, actually.
Like, I mean, they send you so much.
Why is that true?
Because
the Democrats and Republicans have a steady base, so when it comes to election time, they both want independents to.
Yeah.
That's where the
Okay. I getcha.
Tyler, did you sign up?
Yes, I am a registered Democrat.
All right. And Alan, I assume you signed up as a registered Republican.
That would be correct, yes.
All right. So let's start with the Democrat primary field then. It's rather slim this year, isn't it?
It has slimmed out a bit.
Old man and a vampire, so.
Say that again?
You have a shriveled old man and a woman who must be a vampire or something because she looks like she sucks the life out of people, so.
Ellie Fiorina is running as a Democrat now.
Oh, okay. I'll give you that one. I don't like her either, so it's okay.
All right. So, as I said, you guys got four, I think, in the field now?
Only three.
So we have two candidates, Shane.
All right, well, who is the third who is still in?
We have Hillary, we have Bernie, and we have Martin O'Malley.
All right.
Why is O'Malley still in the race? Nobody cares about
him. He's hilarious at debates, man. He's hilarious.
He's allowed at the debates.
They pretty much just ask him one question, and he's done.
Oh, like that.
Please
one.
Acknowledge that I'm here, just during the debate.
So you guys only
still
have,
here, guys. I'm still relevant. I promise.
Three choices.
Two,
Hillary Clinton.
Choices. Shane.
Only two choices.
All right, two choices. Let's just go with that then. Clinton and Sanders. So, from an outsider's perspective, it appears as though Clinton is the steady as we go, potentially Obama's third term, maybe a little bit different on the foreign policy.
You mean actually has foreign policy?
Has a foreign policy. Well, the only reason I say that is she was Secretary of State from 08 to 12.
Yes.
So,
correct.
The question is, was the foreign policy she was pushing out during those years hers, or was it Obama's?
I mean,
likely a combination.
Yeah. It's kind of how that works.
Hers to the extent she could get hers.
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
So given your two choices, which one do you guys go with?
I will be voting for Bernie Sanders in the primaries.
Ew. I'm so sorry.
See, I'd like to vote for Bernie, but this is... So, Shane, I really think we should have done the, like, our views not in the pre-show.
Okay. We can
but
put that
I'm,
in before
my,
it begins.
I'm very socially liberal, but economically, I am... In an ideal world, I would be liberal, but I'm more conservative just in real life, I guess. So I would love for Bernie to be president, but I don't think, well, disregarding like his non-economic stuff. In an ideal world, I like his what?
And his age.
He's in good health, though.
How old is he?
He's like 79.
Yeah, and I don't think 79.
Like I said, he's a shriveled old man.
He's not
74.
He's 74. Damn.
He's in good age though. And every interview he does, he starts off with, "I'm in really good age."
Does he actually say that?
If I ask him, that's always his answer.
Yeah, that's weird. He seems a little weird. But anyway, in an ideal world, I would like his economic policies, but they're just not practical. And I'm not confident about, like, any of his foreign policy, or even if he has that. It's not what he's pushing, and with ISIS and all of that going on in the world right now.
Climate change is directly related to terrorism.
Yeah.
That's not as outlandish as you try to make it seem, though.
It really is, though. I mean, I can understand the reasoning behind it, that, you know, if you can't grow crops in the region, that's going to destabilize their economy.
Exactly.
But there's a pretty big leap between, the local economy is shit, and I'm going to go shoot up people in Paris, because why not?
I don't think there's as big a jump as you are saying there is.
I feel like that's a pretty big leap.
I mean, I can see a correlation, but it's not a direct cause.
I think when your homeland is being destroyed and ravaged by climate change, and your local economy is going to shit, there's nothing else to do except rage.
But why is it being destroyed and ravaged by climate change? What is climate change having a negative effect on there? Is the sea level rising? Is climate change limiting the amount of oil that these countries can export? Because that's their primary
economy. You can't eat oil, Shane.
Well, it generates money coming in.
You can't eat oil, Shane. How does that help the people who don't own the oil?
Well, I mean, presumably you could sell the oil and import food, but that would be a foolish way of doing
it. Okay. I'm going to say that it is not related to terrorism, and saying that climate change is an issue at all is distracting from the real things that need to be focused on in the modern world.
Like what?
National security. The instability of the world economic systems, that's another.
Well, wouldn't it be nice if there were only one or two real issues that we had to deal with?
Yeah.
That would make things so much simpler.
But climate
change
there
is
not
are
a real issue.
Other issues.
There are.
Like,
I just mentioned.
It may not necessarily be as important to you, but it's still there.
Okay. I don't think climate change is going to hurt anyone. I don't even think the science is settled on yet. I don't think it's a real problem that we need to be sinking money into. I think that as a conservative, the general root word of that ideology is to conserve, and conserving also entails that you conserve the environment as well. So therefore, conservatives should be environmentalists.
Clean energy and things like that, as long as they're done in a realistic manner.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, I would love it here in Alberta if we were to invest in nuclear power.
But the Alberta tar sands, Shane.
Are 0.2% of all global emissions. 0.2%.
Oh, I was just making a joke at the expense of Alberta's economy.
Back to the Democratic primary field, please. Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton? Which one is going
Hillary.
To ultimately... Okay.
Hillary's going to pick up the nomination. And
it's inevitable.
So. I don't know if it's inevitable.
It is.
I do.
I mean, the same. I know that this is probably
Bernie will probably be her vice presidential candidate.
I don't think she would do that.
If he's willing.
I don't think he'd be willing.
I mean, I wouldn't come within 10 feet of Hillary Clinton, so I can't say that. I'm
so she wouldn't suck your
discussion.
Blood.
Would you touch her with a 10-foot pole?
No.
Shane, why would you have a 10-foot pole to poke someone with? That's a little weird.
Well, it just goes to saying I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Who has a 10-foot pole that they carry around?
It's just a saying. It's just
you
a
mean
saying.
You don't carry a 10-foot pole around?
Well, I mean, I do, but...
I bet next you'll say that you don't carry around a bayonet to stab people with.
No, I just tape it on.
All right, so
that's legal.
Tyler, you believe that Sanders could potentially win the nomination through a similar way that Obama did in 08?
Exactly. And I know it's been overstated, but people have tried to recapitulate the trends that Obama had over Hillary in 2008 with Bernie's popularity, and they are pretty convincing. So I think the same thing could happen.
Isn't like his primary base young people that are the least likely to vote also?
And that's something I wanted to touch on as well.
In the 2008 election, though, the youth vote.
Yeah, but this is something I want to touch on. The youth vote, the 18. It was 18 to 34s that helped Obama get elected. Yeah, the 18 to 34s turned out in 2008, and they also helped get Obama nominated. Now, after having Obama in office for 8 years and the same group of people seeing what their vote brought them the first time, the question I have is, are they going to be happy to engage in this process again, knowing that, well, Obama didn't exactly turn out how they expected he would?
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there. Why are you saying that?
Well, I'm basically trying to saying is that, well,
I don't feel that having Obama as president has adversely affected my life in any way.
Okay. No, but I'm basically saying from a trust point of view, in that, do you feel as though it's kind of like what we were talking about in the OS 10 segment? Does it still feel as though it was a good choice to make, modern and whatnot, going forward?
Compared to John McCain, he might have been all right, but Mitt Romney, definitely.
Okay, so basically, what I'm trying to find out is if the 2008 and 12 Obama voters are still in the system, as in they're not fed up.
I think that Bernie's big thing
We're
was
all
that
in the system, Shane.
I think that his big
it's
thing
the NSA.
Is I think that his big thing is that he's, and this is going to sound really, really dumb, but millennials like this. His whole big thing is that, like, it's a process that everyone needs to be a part of. And I think that millennials
You're
people
special.
Who are just yeah, exactly. That he's making people
snowflake.
Feel special through their he says that the one thing that he repeats a lot in his debates and his interviews is that the one thing that Obama did really wrong is that after being elected, he kind of said, "Okay, guys, I don't need you anymore. I can go head to head with these Republicans and get done." But Bernie's whole thing
Tyler.
Is that Bernie's whole thing is that he wants a political revolution, which sounds super dumb. But I think
it really
that the concept isn't dumb, which is that he doesn't just want you to stop being part of the process once you've elected him. He wants you to elect all the Democrats into all the Senate seats and House of Representatives.
Well, that's because Democrats never win midterm elections. Yeah, that's a common pattern.
Yes, but he wants to stop that.
I mean, I think all of the Democratic candidates would want that. They're just not.
But no one has talked about it at this point in their presidential campaigning as Bernie has.
Okay.
And I think that gives someone a good idea.
The point I'm trying to make is that if Obama forgot about these people, will Sanders forget about these people as well? And will that Obama forgetting about them keep them at home and prevent them from nominating him?
I fail to see how. Can you explain why you're saying Obama forgot about the youth? Because I don't understand where you're coming from with that.
I mean, he did put up whatever the White House petition website is that nobody has ever used seriously.
Change.org.
Yeah, that's it. I wasn't sure.
Tyler, you said that Obama forgot about people.
I didn't say that he forgot about people. One thing that Bernie says a lot is that he thought that he could do enough without the inclusion of the people that voted for him.
Right. And I see that.
Explain.
Tyler?
So pretty much that Obama pretty much thought that once being elected, he was done with the voters. He didn't need them to then voice support to their congressmen and women about issues and whatnot. He just, like, told them, okay, I'm fine. I'm president now. I'll get whatever I want. Like, I'll make the Republicans come to talk and everything. So, yeah, that's pretty much what I went, what I meant.
I mean, you know, to be fair, as much as I think that everyone should, you know, write to their representatives and whatnot, you know, what are the youth going to do for the president, though, is the question I would have.
Yeah, like, I don't feel...
I mean, just vote.
...particularly forgotten.
I mean,
just come out and vote.
People should be involved in the political process anyway, regardless of which side you're on. That shouldn't need to be a campaign point, which is really, I think, one of the broader problems, you know, with American politics in general, but that's a different argument altogether.
I mean, I agree. It is definitely a weak point, a very weak point of American politics.
Okay. So we got one for Sanders and one for Clinton.
What about you, Shane?
Well, I'm not voting in either primary.
But who do you think will get the nomination?
Who would you vote for?
Yeah.
Do you want to know who I would vote for in the Democratic primary or just overall?
Who, if you had to pick one of those candidates to be president, because you could also take it the other way and pick the one who would be least likely to win. So if one of those two had to be president, which would you pick, Shane?
I would have to go with Clinton, mainly because Sanders' economic ideas are not feasible.
Alan?
I mean, I don't like either of them, but I guess Clinton would be less damaging than Sanders. I don't know.
I'm also of the same here.
It's not ideal.
I'm also of the opinion that any president will be better than President Obama.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
Can you give like three
succinct
bullet points about why you say that, Shane?
Well, I can sum it up.
Three bullet points.
Foreign policy, economy, and the inability to work with the other side.
So the third one, why?
In my view, it's job of the president to be kingmaker in Congress.
But he is.
You need to bring
king.
People together and make deals in order to get your legislation through, which he stopped doing after he lost the House in 2010.
I mean, is that really uncommon?
Yeah, I feel like every president has that issue at some point during their presidency.
I mean, considering how polarized American politics are, I'd have a hard time seeing any president convince the other side to cooperate with
him.
Regardless, the reason I say that is because we come from here in Canada, and the UK does this as well. It's very rare that Canada or the UK does not have a majority government and you have governments that are in paralysis. And if they are in paralysis, then you end up going to an election because most likely the government has lost the confidence of the House.
But that's not how it works. So
that's not how it works, right? But that's the reason I suggest that Obama should have attempted to work better with Congress.
How can you work with people who don't want literally anything you want?
I mean, when your goals are completely opposed, it's kind of hard to cooperate.
Yeah.
Find an intermediary.
Like what?
I don't know. Bill Clinton. No, that's...
No.
Yes,
no.
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 That's not a serious
suggestion.
Shooting
that down.
All right. So fast forward 8 months. We're in August, July. Who has won the nomination? Who's the VP on the Democrat side?
My bet is Hillary Sanders, if Sanders is willing.
I mean, who else would she pick, though, is the question.
Yeah,
I don't follow Democratic politics closely.
I think that Biden could definitely be a VP.
Could he again, though?
He definitely could. He definitely could.
Who?
I'm not sure about Biden. That, actually.
Who for VP? I missed that.
Joe Biden.
I'm not sure he can be.
You definitely can't.
There's a term limit on that, I don't think.
There's no term limit on that.
There's not a term limit on that.
It can also be a foreigner.
Pick that up.
It can be a foreigner?
I think so.
No, you have to be eligible to be president to be vice president. I'm pretty sure that's established.
Okay.
But I could be wrong.
I could see it being Biden, though, assuming that there isn't anything that precludes him.
All right. Because
if he had entered the presidential election, he would have been a very strong contender.
Nope. Sorry.
And I think he's done a good job as vice president already.
What has he done, honestly?
He provides me comic relief while watching State of the Union.
Well, besides that, yeah. Didn't they, like, hide him away for most of Obama's administration?
He definitely did a lot less in the first term. But he's done some, like, he's pushed some economic bills and whatnot in the second term. Nothing hugely of note, but he has done something.
Right. Yeah, I'll take your word for it. So I can't remember the last time I saw him in the news, but, you know.
He's always in the news making me laugh.
Well, I mean, other than people speculating that he'd run for vice or for president, but, you know, other than that, I mean. So.
All right. Alan, what about you? Nomination for the Democrat side?
I mean, like I said, I don't like either of them. So,
but who's it going to be if you had to?
Because I think he's less likely to win. Or on the other hand, I could go with Hillary because I think she's less likely to actually accomplish anything.
All right, but who? If you had to put money on it, who would be the winner today?
Hillary.
All right, and the VP?
I mean, I have no idea. I can't see Sanders. You know, I don't like
Bill
him.
Clinton.
Well, Bill Clinton's not eligible. You can be the first lady.
You're not eligible?
During Hillary's 2016 candidacy, she said that she had considered naming Bill Clinton as her vice president, but had been advised that it would be unconstitutional.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's not eligible, but, you know.
I think he's eligible because it's,
I mean, I guess if, you know,
the 22nd Amendment is concerned with electing to the office of the president, but
that's right.
Nothing about the vice president.
So he'd be able to serve out the term.
Vice president, and I guess if, you know, Hillary walked into direct sunlight and burst into flames, if they needed somebody to replace her, they could just go straight to whoever's next in line for succession. He's not eligible.
Yeah, but
according to the Wikipedia page, an individual must not have served two terms as the president of the United States. Is one
yeah,
of the
yeah, but that's talking about. This is the 22nd Amendment, and this is talking about the president, not the vice president.
The 12th Amendment states that no person constitutionally ineligible to the office of the president shall be eligible to that of the vice president of the United States. So it's the same eligibility as president.
Okay.
So yeah, that would eliminate him.
It's unclear, though, whether a...
Yeah, I think it is unclear.
The president could later serve as vice president.
And we are not constitutional law experts here, so we're just...
I'm just reading the Wikipedia page.
But,
that makes sense, experts.
So, as for me, I'm going to say that if it was held today, the nominee would be Clinton, and she would either choose Sanders or she would choose a young congressperson from the North.
Yeah.
Do you have any in mind?
I do not. I do not. I don't follow that side of the house.
Who's the crazy lady? Nancy Pelosi.
No.
She's from California, and she is not young.
She's so old.
No.
She's actually Trekkie's representative.
Oh. I'm
so sorry. San Francisco.
I bet he loves that.
He has my condolences also.
He lives in California.
I mean, it's true.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
I was going to make that joke at some point during this, but I guess I won't now.
Nope, beat you to it.
All right, so moving to the far more interesting field, the Republican field. I think they're still up at 13 or 14 candidates as of today.
Let's not name them all.
Do it.
I'm not
do it,
going.
Shane. Do it. Do
no.
It. Do it.
I have no idea who they all are, so I'm not going to do that. But,
do it.
Let's see.
Just name like the top five.
Trump, Cruz,
Elvis,
Carson, who
Jesus.
Else is in the top five?
Jesus,
Rubio,
Mickey and Mouse,
and Bush. There you go.
So who would be six? Fiore?
I have no idea.
I mean, everyone that's not in the top two or three brackets has like 2% of the electorate. So until they start dropping out, it's kind of a toss-up.
I guess that's true.
Ever be relevant.
Yeah. And as I've said previously to some people, we're looking at a Final Four that is going to shape up as having... it's going to be shaping up as having Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, and perhaps Ben Carson.
Oh, I hope not.
No, I'm not a fan of Carson, so.
It's crazy.
Neither am I. Neither am I.
So, but. I think that Jeb Bush is a reasonable candidate, the only reasonable candidate, but, I mean, because of George Bush, he's not going to win.
I'm going to drag him down. I personally like Rand Paul. He seems like a reasonable guy, but, you know, reasonable doesn't grab attention.
I also wouldn't say he's reasonable.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it depends on...
You have to break down the machine, the Washington machine.
I would say the only two unreasonable candidates on the Republican side are Chris Christie and Jeb Bush.
Why Chris Christie?
Wait, say that again?
I would say the only two unreasonable ones on the Republican side are Chris Christie and Jeb Bush.
Why?
I think they're too moderate.
I would give that to Christie. I don't think Bush is too moderate.
I think Bush is more moderate than others.
I'm not even sure who's still in the race. I should actually look that up. Because there's so many of them, it's not really worth following them all closely.
Exactly. And that's why I limited that to a top four.
You're right behind anyone yet, is the problem.
So...
Oh, Rex Santorum is still running.
Yes, he is
indeed. He's still in the race.
Valma Kiddington? I've never even heard
Who's
of that.
Who's George Pataki? I didn't know he was running at all.
Skip Andrews? Governor. Who are these people?
Jim
exactly,
Gilmore.
Right?
I have no idea
Elvis.
Who this...
So there's lots of choice on the Republican side. So as we started off the Democrat side with Reed and Tyler, let's start off with you, Alan. Who is your current forerunner pick, if you could pick one to be the nominee?
I mean, I don't know. At this point, like I said, it doesn't really matter because they're all pretty much tied. I honestly haven't looked that closely into their policies yet because there's so many of them to try and compare and contrast. You know, once people start to drop out, you know, their supporters will shift to someone else. So either we'll see a clear front runner or some of the other minor candidates will start to catch up with, you know, Trump and whoever's in second place. And then it'll actually be worth kind of sorting out.
Did you ever take that I side with thing?
I did, and I'd have to, because I know I put that on Facebook. Let me see if I can find that.
Okay. Because I remember sending that to you. Tyler, have you taken it?
I think so.
Okay.
I got Marco Rubio on mine.
Oh, yeah, I've done this. I got Bernie.
Give me a couple minutes to track that down.
I also got Bernie, like 92%.
Wow. I was 90% Rubio, but I think Rubio is perhaps a little bit too soft on the immigration side of things. But
all right, so
splitting hairs.
So who are you supporting for the Republican nomination, Shane?
This is a hard choice because it's a question of
isn't it?
No, the reason it's hard is because I would like to support Donald Trump, but I don't know if he can win the general election.
Well, the thing to keep in mind is whoever the Republicans nominate is going to race to the center once they get the nomination so they can...
Yeah, they're
going
to have to. They're
going to
have to.
Voters, so.
Yeah. But it jumps back and forth between Donald Trump and Ted Cruz.
Aren't you supposed to hate people from Calgary, though?
No. And in fact, it was Ted Cruz for a long time before Donald Trump got in the race. So I don't foresee that changing.
But the whole Oilers Flames thing, Shane, you're supposed to
hate everyone.
Oh,
that doesn't bother me. That doesn't bother me.
So. What do you think about the wild remarks that Trump makes?
I think they're what the good chunk of Americans are thinking.
I mean, a lot of the things he says, you know, he says them terribly. He's obviously not a politician because politicians don't offend people so flagrantly and without... You know.
He's running his campaign like reality TV.
He really is.
Yeah, and that's...
That's literally what he's doing.
And there's one terrific upside about this. Well, actually, two terrific upsides. The first one is that this lets him control the media. The media does not control him, and that's why he's not hurt by any of the stuff he says. And number two...
Well, when everything that he says draws so much attention, there's no such thing as bad publicity, even in
politics. And number two is when he says these things, it brings those issues to the forefront. Immigration, terrorism, refugees, you name it.
That's one thing I have noticed. And to be fair, I don't watch cable news because I'm not going to pay for cable that I don't have a use for. But, you know, gun control was all the rage in the news that I saw anyway, up until he started saying the ban Muslims thing. And then complete and total shift in attention from what I've seen. So.
Yeah. And that is one thing I wish the Republican candidates would learn, is how to use the media rather than have the media use them. Because it's a slanted system if you're a conservative.
Media.
Education is against you, the courts are against you, the media is against you, the entire establishment is against you. So at some point you gotta realize
and learn. At some point you gotta take a hint.
And learn how to use the media and education systems towards your advantage to promote that side.
The I side with thing. Apparently I was at 90% for Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz.
Yep,
and
same for me.
16% and 8% for Sanders and Clinton, respectively.
6 and 8?
16 and 8.
Nice.
Apparently I side with Bernie Sanders on education and nothing with Hillary. But it also says that I side with them for education with Rubio Cruz, and I think there was someone else with their cutoff. So
I somehow side with Donald Trump on 55% of issues. I feel really...
Oh, right on.
I feel really weird about that.
Well, and a lot of the things that he says, he's
he doesn't take an opinion.
Well, that, and the things that he does suggest, a lot of them aren't that outrageous. He just does a terrible job of presenting it. Immigration control is certainly nothing new. That's, you know... The problem
also,
is the way he's presented it.
Also, yeah, he makes suggestions... He never, takes a actual stand on something. He's always like, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I don't know.
Right. Well, and I think on his
website...
But
he throws the idea out there.
Just to get it in discussion, which is one thing that he does do well, is get discussion.
And that's what I like about him.
I like him because he's entertaining. I mean, honestly, if he won, I'd be happy just to see people's reactions, because those would be priceless. But
yes, me too. Me too. It'd be like we've had Obama for 8 years now. The other side's at the control.
Something completely different.
And let's watch the liberals scream for 8 years and see what kind of torture we can do to them.
Wow, Shane.
When you put it like that, I'm not sure.
Shit.
Sure,
yeah. All right. You stay in Canada, please.
Oh, I have my own set of problems here, Reed. Remember?
Hey, you want to hear a joke?
No,
sure.
Alberta's
jokes.
Economy in 5 years.
Oh, that's a good one.
Because it's entirely oil based.
All right, we've spent far too much time on the U.S. election, I think. So let's talk about ultimate decisions as to who is going to win the Republican nominee. And then finally, who will win the election against our choices of Clinton and whoever we're choosing for the Republican side.
Whoever's going to win the Republican nomination, whoever somehow survives to the end, it could change daily.
Yeah.
Or it does change daily.
So
wasn't Carson a front runner for a while, and then he said something
and
went
so
way
Fiorina,
down in the
and
polls?
She's dropped out.
Thank
to,
God.
The low portions too. So
Okay.
No percentages, I mean. So it's,
well,
you know, it's a toss-up.
In an ideal world, if I had to do the same thing and choose the Republicans who I think would win and make the best vice president, I would have to go with Ted Cruz for electability and Lindsey Graham as his vice president.
Why?
Well, why Ted Cruz just for his anti-establishment.
No, Lindsey Graham.
Foreign policy.
Yeah, who is Lindsey Graham?
Senator from South Carolina.
Okay.
He's running in the Republican nomination race, but he's relatively low in the polls.
Oh,
yeah, that's why I was wondering why you would pick him.
As vice president, yeah.
Because he hadn't done much.
Either that or John Kasich from Ohio, since I think having a VP from Ohio could be useful. But for electability sake, let's go with Ted Cruz. Alan?
I have no idea. There's too many of them. I mean,
okay.
It's such a mess right now. I mean,
all
right. See who drops out and then start to choose.
Whoever makes it to the end.
I mean, I can't stand Sanders or Clinton, so whoever they nominate is probably going to get my vote unless something really dramatic happens to change my mind. So,
like they commit murder.
I think there would be bigger issues than.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's.
Yeah. I know
right.
A lot of people
shame.
Are comparing
no,
Donald
shame.
Trump to Hitler, but if he annexes the Sudetenland, then I'll start to reconsider my position.
This is true. This is true. All right. In final toss up, who wins, Clinton or the generic Republican nominee?
Does
Clinton.
Anybody like Hillary Clinton? I mean,
I would say Clinton.
Okay.
I really think that, like I said, Jeb Bush is the only reasonable candidate in his views right now, I think. But what do I know?
And see, we can still be friends. I said Jeb Bush and Chris Christie were the only unreasonable candidates.
Yeah, and you also like Max. I don't know why I still talk to you, honestly. There's a lot wrong with you, Shane. A lot that needs to be addressed.
Sigh.
All right. And I guess that's it for the Republican, or I'm sorry, not the Republican part of the show, but the U.S. election part. Anything else before we move on to Reed's final two topics?
No, I don't guess so.
I'm good.
Hi, good.
Damn it, I knew it.
All right. These are two topics prepared by Reed, so I'll let him introduce them for you.
As Shane would say, the gays.
What about them?
I've never said that.
You have. I don't know, I just wanted to throw in something that would make Shane uncomfortable.
Shane, does it bother you that I sexually identify as an attack helicopter?
All right, okay, I can actually work with that. So, like, all of these gender-neutral things. How about that, Shane? Could you discuss that?
Sure.
All right.
Please proceed.
So, Alan and I sexually identify as Apache. Well, I identify as an Apache helicopter. I don't know what Alan identifies as specifically.
I like the Comanche helicopter, but it was canceled, so I don't know where that puts me.
In a state of sexual frustration, I'm sure.
Apparently. I think there was, what, like two models, so I just have to find the one other. Or two prototypes.
You have to find your soulmate.
Oh, Lord, not
Let's
this
find
now.
Out.
Well, we already know who your soulmate is, Shane. You don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, there's exactly two built, so there's one other person out there for me. I'm good.
Aww. All right,
so
Shane.
So what is the question?
What do you think about it?
About what?
All of the gender... Not just... I don't know.
Non-binaries.
Yeah, I'll put it in simple terms. If you are of an age where you can make a sane decision and you're not being forced to do it by a parent or something along the lines of that, if it is a decision you feel is right for you, then I think that's a decision that you should be comfortable with. And if you want to identify as that, that's perfectly fine.
So what you're saying is it's not okay for me to marry off my daughters to forge alliances with neighboring countries.
Maybe if you lived in the 16th century, but not today.
Oh, damn it.
That's not the answer you were expecting, were you?
I mean, he won't offer, like, two camels to win his soulmate, Alan, so...
That's true, I mean...
I don't think he's gonna do much of anything.
You know, I can cut the price lower, Shane, if that would, you know, sweeten the deal. Please,
no,
anything.
No,
I'll take two
gerbils.
Please.
Shane's soulmate is Alan's sister, for those of you at home.
That's what they say. That's entirely untrue. Entirely untrue.
How do you know? You haven't even tried.
Because I don't
want
it.
He's got you there, Shane. He's got you there.
All right. Any other real questions?
I don't know, Shane. I'm just trying to go with... I feel like we've not touched on as many issues as we should have.
Well, we're already an hour and a half in.
Oh.
Yeah. But... The reason
whatever.
I didn't further include issues such as gay marriage or something similar is because that is something we talked about in 2006.
2006?
Shame that was 9 years ago.
That was so
when we did
long
the first
ago.
Uncorked episode. And I don't think there's much to say about it at this point.
I think a lot has changed since 2006.
Exactly, hence why there's not too much to say. It's de facto legal in the U.S. It's been legal in Canada since 2005.
Not de facto.
Since
2005?
It is legal.
Yeah.
De facto means that it's not legal, but it practically is in practice.
Oh, okay.
Like English is the de facto official language of the United States.
I thought
there
that with
no
the Supreme...
official language of the United States.
The reason I say that
were,
is because...
it would need to be English.
Yes.
With the Supreme Court ruling that was made this past year, I thought it was then up to the states to enact the appropriate laws to make it legal.
No, I think
if I remember correctly, the court ruling overturned any existing laws to prevent it.
Exactly.
I could be wrong.
Because I'm...
Okay, then.
There's nothing states can do.
Well, states' rights!
You can do that.
Time to, for the South to rise again.
The South rise again.
Good luck with that down there.
Well, of course we'll have good luck with it. We have all the guns, remember?
Oh, that's true. I forgot.
I remember reading recently that I think Texas is like the root of 40% of the nation's military. But I could be wrong. That number might be outdated. I don't know.
That seems
fascinating.
Weird.
Fascinating. All right. Well, I think that about does us in for this portion of the show, unless there's any other...
Man.
Yeah, I'm tired after this, aren't you guys?
I'm tired.
Yes. I'm never tired. Always ready.
I never tired.
All right. Well, I hope that you listeners have enjoyed this perspective into real world issues outside of RSBNB, RuneScape, and the occasional piece of tech news. We'll probably do it again next year. And with that being said, onwards to the rest of the show. Thank you, Alan and Tyler, for joining us.
Wait, what? There's more?
Yeah,
well,
sure.
You and I are... Just wait. But once again...
Oh, God, I didn't sign up for this.
Thank you, Alan and Tyler, for joining us.
You're welcome, Shane. Anytime you want me to rant about, you know, anything.
It was great.
Those godless liberals.
Yep.
Yep.
And moving forward from those other topics, hopefully you guys enjoyed that and got a bit more of an insight into what Earth and I feel about worldly issues. But
and Alan and Tyler.
Yes, Alan and Tyler as well.
You can't forget our lovely guests.
Yeah, yeah. I'm interested to think or wonder what they'll think of Alan and Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
They're very good people.
Mm-hmm.
For being roped into that like that with less than 24 hours notice.
We gave Alan like 5 minutes, didn't we? Or was
no,
that
we,
Tyler?
We gave Tyler 5 minutes notice.
We're but such nice people.
We really are. And that's why we're going to talk about Skill of the Month right now. Because Sorensen57 is still in first place with 25.7 million experience gained. And we're nice people because we're giving him another mention, whereas everyone else is flatline. Second place remains Parnassius with 4.8 million XP gained. And in third place is Lord Fast Wesley with 3.8 million experience.
Nice.
Yeah, and this is Fletching, and they got about a week and a bit left, so it'll be interesting to see if anyone mounts a comeback, but it's not looking like it at this point.
Go team.
Team Blue?
I don't know.
All right, all right.
Just team, man.
No, okay. Sounds good to me. Achievements of the week. You want to run through these? Last achievements of 2015?
I guess I can do that. Alright, so on December 19th, 2015, it's Arceus got 99 smithing, and on December 18th, 2015, Sirion got 99 smithing.
Excellent. Good work,
yay,
everyone. All right, well, it's time
for... Does
it
bother you that I did that backwards than I normally do it?
No.
Okay.
Doesn't bother me at all. You can do whatever you want. You could say it in French if you wanted to.
Why would I want to do that, though? That's the question.
I don't know. You could do it in Spanish, the other language of the USA.
The United States has no official language.
Oh, I thought it was de facto English.
Yes, it's de facto English, but it has no official language. So, you were factually incorrect just then, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for adding the factually.
You're
okey-dokes.
Welcome.
Well, I have the last pick of the week of the year, and this one is an iOS application.
No.
But it's from Microsoft.
Ah.
It's Microsoft's Outlook application for iOS. Now,
really?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, there's an Outlook application for iOS. And basically what they did is they acquired a very popular iOS mail client. The name, unfortunately, escapes me right now. But they added OneDrive and all kinds of other neat little integration aspects to it. Slapped on a Microsoft logo and probably have the second best mail application on iOS aside from the default mail.
I will say one thing. That unified inbox is the only thing I miss about iOS.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you can do it in Outlook for iOS, believe it or not.
Mm. Although, I kind of, like, that's a feature that I do like, but like I can also live without it. It was nice, but it's also interesting that
you like it.
I don't
know.
That's something that is missing, I guess.
All right,
that option. I don't know if I would prefer that. Oh, I definitely missed it a lot when I first got it. When I first got my new phone back in January, but now I'm used to it, so.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some ways, you know, that it's good and bad to have unified versus not, but.
I also rearranged some stuff, so now it's a lot easier to switch between them, because remember, I used to have all those huge tiles on my home screen, and then I rearranged everything so everything was small, right?
Right, right.
So after I did that, it got a lot better.
Yeah, and I can see that. And, you know, it's interesting that Microsoft doesn't provide that as an option on Windows Phone, because that is an option here on Outlook for iOS. So
I really don't like the Outlook one on Windows itself.
No, that's...
It's irritating to switch between accounts.
Yeah, it's downright horrible, and you can't drag and drop attachments. At least you couldn't back in September.
Mm.
So, anyways, we're getting down a rat hole here. But iOS, or rather Outlook for iOS, is free. You can get it on the App Store. It also has calendar integration and can send attachments from your Dropbox, OneDrive box, you name it, rather than actually sending large attachments, which is really the way to do attachments in email in this day and age. So I would highly recommend taking a look at it. If you have other accounts that do not support notifications in the default iOS mail app. So that's Outlook for iOS. Unified Inbox is an option, also can do calendar. So it's an all-in-one productivity tool.
Oh boy.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
All right.
So what have you been up to?
Sleeping.
Oh, okay. Still catching up after, or I guess recovering from the school year then?
Yes.
I mean, that's fair. You're allowed to do that.
Thank you.
Yeah. All ready for Christmas?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, same here. And that's, you know, been the general theme this week as well. Everything's ready for that. Gifts have been presented and exchanged so far. And Christmas Eve, as you guys are listening to this, or maybe Christmas Day, that's what we're doing today. So I think everybody's doing pretty much something of that in
nature.
One form or another. Yes, it's natural.
It's natural.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And since we are releasing this on Christmas Eve, there's only one thing left to do.
Paul?
No.
Thank God.
No. Uncle Dano is going to read us The Night Before Christmas.
Where is he?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Storytime with Uncle Dano. I'm very honored to have been asked to read to you today a very special Christmas story. 'Twas the night before Christmas. 'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below. When what to my wondering eye should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. With a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with the sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled. His dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses. His nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk. And laying his finger aside of his nose, and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night." Godspeed, and a very Merry Christmas to all of you from my house to yours. Sincerely, Uncle Dano.